Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the All Vocational Rehabilitation conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, June 14th, 2016. I will now turn today's conference over to Nate Arnold. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Hope your summer is getting off to a pleasant start. We have a pretty full agenda, I'm sure you can tell by looking at it. And the first thing on the agenda is 301 medical cases. We've had a number of questions come into the help desk recently concerning 301 cases, even though it's something we don't see a lot of. And in trying to respond to those, we realized that even here in ORDES, we didn't have a really comprehensive understanding of how the whole process worked. So in looking into it, we realized we needed to reach out to some of the other players in the process. And to give you a little background on 301 claims, for those of you that aren't familiar with them at all or who have never seen one, Section 301 of the Social Security Act enables disability beneficiaries to continue receiving payments following a medical cessation. You know, since we started having electronic case openings by VRs, we have, I think, a lot less of these cases than we used to. And it's probably primarily the ones you get now are when they undergo an age 18 redetermination for SSI beneficiaries or somebody who failed TPR for some reason or whatnot, and they're still going to have a CDR. But if that person who has this cessation is receiving services through a VR agency, an employment network, or some other appropriate service provider, like they have a PASS or an educational IEP, if they began receiving those services before the month their disability is ceased, and if SSA determines that completion of the program that they're in will increase the likelihood that the beneficiary will not return to the rolls, then they become what we call an official 301 case. In those cases, VR agencies are eligible for reimbursement of expenses, but that part, which we will talk a little bit about, some of the nuances of that, is truly the back end of the 301 process. You will see that through this discussion. By the time we become aware that it's a 301 case, many other components in SSA have already been involved with it, field offices, DDS, and our own Office of Disability Operations. So I thought we would start this by giving you an overview of that whole process, and grateful to our counterparts over in the Office of Disability Operations who have agreed to provide you with a PowerPoint, which will really, I think, greatly increase your understanding of what goes on before it gets to the point that we're actually going to be filing a claim on it. With us today, we have Nathaniel Williams, John France, and Angela Alexander from the Office of Disability Operations. They're going to walk you through the whole operational piece of this, and then after that, I'll get back on here and we'll talk a little bit about the actual cost reimbursement claims piece. Nathaniel, you ready?
Yes, sir. Okay. Hello, everyone. Nathaniel Williams. The Office of Disability Operations prepared a PowerPoint presentation on ODOS procedures for processing Section 301 determination. Page one of that PowerPoint package. Sit back, relax, and learn. Okay? Okay, page two. The Section 301 process starts off in the field offices, and they are the point of contact for the state vocational rehabilitation VR services. The field offices will identify the case involving participation in the VR or similar program as part of the medical continuing disability review, CDR process. The field office will annotate the records of cases involving the participation in a VR or similar program with the following remarks. Potential 301 case sent to DDS on a specific date. They will annotate the date that they sent it to the DDS. The field office routes the case to the DDS services for medical determination. Okay, page three. After the DDS makes the medical determination, DDS will notify the field office of that medical cessation through the Electronic Disability Collect System, known as EDCS, action page with the following message. CDR cessation added. Potential 301 benefit continuation. The DDS notates that there is a potential 301 eligibility on the medical cessation case by inputting a Y on the 832 and or 833 in the 301 case field of that document. Page 4. The field offices will use the development of participation in a vocational or similar program form, known as the FSA 4290, to develop for any participation in a VR or similar program for potential entitlement to Section 301 benefits. After the Section 301 development is completed, the field offices will transmit the case to ODO by faxing the potential Section 301 case flag to ODO's paperless processing center system using the following fax number there on page 4. Page 5. SSA will continue to pay benefits for a specified time period, even though the person's disability has been determined no longer disabled by DDS, if the person is actively participating in a VR or similar program. ODO will make the initial Section 301 determination as to whether the individual completion of the VR similar program or continuation in the program for a specified period of time will increase the likelihood that the individual will not return to the disability or blindness roles. Page 6. ODO will take the following action immediately upon receipt of a potential Section 301 case from the field office. For Title II cases, ODO will first check the MBR, the Master Beneficiary Record, for a special message in the special message field for the Section 301 remarks. If there are no remarks, ODO will annotate the remarks on the MBR in the special message field. Those remarks will state, Section 301 determination pending. Do not take action on the medical cessation. And it will give you a date. Page 7. For Title 16 cases, ODO checks the SSR record for Section 301 remarks and the Vocational Rehabilitation Plan VP diary. If there are no remarks or VP diary present on the SSR record, ODO faxes a request to the servicing field office to input the diary and to update the remarks to the SSR record. Page 8. ODO reviews the SSA 4290 and development obtained by the field office to verify that the beneficiary is participating in a VR or similar program that meets the definition of an appropriate program of VR services. Page 9. Once ODO makes the Section 301 determination, ODO will take the following actions for all Section 301 cases. ODO will document the Section 301 determination on a special determination form, SSA 553. ODO will also prepare and send a notice of allowance or denial of the Section 301 payment continuation to the beneficiary. Then ODO will complete a web-based Section 301 database. Now, it's important to note that the functionality of the web-based Section 301 database is limited, and it does not allow for data to be pulled from four specific states. In addition, ODO does not maintain that data. Page 10. For Title 16, Section 301 cases, ODO takes the following actions after making a Section 301 determination. ODO will create a modernized development worksheet known as the MDW and faxes the Section 301 flag to the servicing field office for instructions to annotate the Section 301 determination to the SSR record remarks field and establish or update the Vocational Rehabilitation Plan VP diary on the SSR record. Page 11. Now, for Title II, Section 301 cases, ODO takes the following actions after making a Section 301 determination. ODO will post the Section 301 determination to the Disability Control File, known as the DCF, and create a one-year diary from the current month to review the Section 301 allowance cases. Note, if the beneficiary completes the VR or similar program before the one-year diary matures, the VR or similar program will contact the field office, who will notify ODO by completing a report of contact form known as the SSA 5002. Okay, next, page 12. If the beneficiary is participating in a state VR agency program, the state VR agency may be eligible for VR reimbursement under circumstances. Therefore, ODO will fax a copy of the SSA 4290, a copy of the SSA 553 special determination of the Section 301, and the SSA 833 and or 832 to ORDES, OTOPS VR Claims Processing Unit, and it gives the fax number and to make it attention to 301 processing unit. Note, ODO does not send any Section 301 annual or determination notices to the state VR agency. Okay, page 13. ODO has automated the process for matured Section 301 BP diaries on the SSR record for Title 16 cases to help expedite the review and processing of Section 301 actions. The matured BP diary alert goes directly into ODO's paperless processing system for review. The field offices may monitor to ensure that the matured Section 301 VP diaries are reviewed and may send any inquiry to the Operations Support Branch at the phone number listed to the attention of the 301 analyst. All right, that's the end. That concludes ODO's processing procedures for Section 301 cases. We hope that you enjoyed the presentation on the ODO Section 301 process.
Thank you very much, Nathaniel.
You're quite welcome.
Most, I'm sure, from the VR standpoint, you folks really don't need to be obviously that aware of all the behind-the-scenes machinations that go on in the process, but I think it's helpful to understand how it goes down and what the overall flow of communication is. The flow, the initial notification and all of the communication with the VRs generally happens with the field office. Other than the fact that when we become aware that it's a 301 case, we are also going to let the cost reimbursement coordinators know that it is. But by that time, somebody else in the VR should have already been aware of it from the field office at the time the determination is made. Now, before we open this up for question and answer, I want to go over a couple of things from the claim standpoint, and then we'll take questions on both the actual SSA part of the process and the cost reimbursement claims part of it at the same time. A person's 301 eligibility ends when either one of three things happens. They stop participating in the program, they complete the program, which for VR purposes basically means case closure, or SSA determines that continued participation will not increase the likelihood that they're not going to return to the rolls. And that could happen as a result of one of the diaries or just the person's failure to continue to make progress. At the end of the 301 process, there are several things I'd like you to remember about filing cost reimbursement claims. First off, you cannot be paid for a regular SGA-based claim and a 301 claim for the same period of VR. There is no requirement for 9 months of SGA earnings in 301 cases. So if you're aware of a 301 case, you don't have to sit there and track the earnings and wait to get 9 months to file the claim. The earnings are not pertinent on a 301 case. The payment period on a 301 case ends the month before benefits terminate or 301 eligibility ends. Claims cannot be paid on a 301 case until the benefits are actually terminated. So there could be a lag period between when case gets closed and SSA actually processes benefits termination. We can't pay that claim until those benefits are actually terminated. And cost reimbursement claims, and this is probably the most important little nuance of this, on a 301 claim must be filed within 12 months of case closure. So again, it has nothing to do with the ninth month of SGA or anything like that. The key date that starts that clock ticking is when you close the case, and you have 12 months at that point to file the claim. I'm going to ask all of you or encourage all of you to make sure to check the correct box on the front of the 199 to indicate that it is actually a 301 case and not a regular case. That would certainly help our processing here. If it's not checked, it's entirely possible that somebody might not pick up on the fact that it's 301 and deny it because they aren't sufficient earnings or for some other reason or not pay it correctly. That's all the particular claims things I can think of, unless anybody else in the room has something. Operator, at this point, I think we can go ahead and open it up for questions.
If you would like to ask an audio question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1. Please hold for your first question. You have a question from the line of Eugenia.
I heard somebody laughing back there.
Hi,
Eugenia.
Hello. This is a question that we've been asking for years and years and years.
Okay, what's the question?
The question is that most of us don't have a clue how we learn about the Section 301 cases. I've heard that California used to periodically get a list from somebody. I don't know who that came from. But how do we even know we have one, since all the things that were just explained are all done behind the scenes? So unless a beneficiary comes to us and say, hey, I got this letter about being denied for a Section 301, we have absolutely no clue when and where there is one.
Well, if they tell you they were denied for it, then obviously they are not one. But as I just said, somebody in the VR should have gotten a notice from the field office. I don't know where they go, and it could vary from VR to VR who's getting those. But again, the important thing is, I think to help nail that down from the claims perspective, we're going to send an email with a copy of the, basically the determination scanned and attached to it to the claims coordinator in each VR when we receive the determination. So at least going forward, you should be aware of everyone that's coming through the pipeline at this point.
Okay. And so at some point in time, because everything was done behind the scenes, our work incentive network developed two handouts that we've sent to you guys before. One is a handout to give guidance to the VR counselor, and one is the handout to hand out to the beneficiary so they know what to do if they even hear about what a Section 301 is. Because it's all done behind the scenes, we wanted to give some guidance on what was actually happening. So we do have those, and we have sent them to you guys, because we have been, this is something that's been in the dark for us for so long that, you know, we wanted to get something out there to field staff to even know that this is, even exists, and to make it very clear that everything had to have happened with the Section 301 while they were in a plan. And we wanted the beneficiary to know that this is a potential if they go into a medical succession. So we do have those, and we do have those available if anybody wants them. But again, it's good to know that you're going to let us know when there is one, because we have not a clue, and I believe in the chat that somebody said that their field office doesn't even know what a Section 301 is. So there's so much miscommunication on this, and we have never filed them. We've never been notified, and I've been doing this, what, 7-8 years? So, again, I'm hoping that we get something, because I know there's got to be some out there.
Yeah, I can't speak to the number that are out there. We have no means of, by compiling a list or anything like that, but we don't see that many either, so I don't think you can expect to see a ton of these. But, again, we're trying to tighten that process up. I think it's great that you have something for the counselors to give them.
Yeah, we have one for the counselor and we have one for the beneficiary.
Yeah, that, you know, the information is in the Red Book, the information that SSA has out there, but a separate pamphlet and the counselors being aware of it would obviously help allay any apprehension on the customer's part.
Yeah, and then the other question with regards to claims. So let's say we've served this person three times in the past, but then the last time we served them, they went into medical succession and they went into a Section 301. Now, we can file that claim for a Section 301, which doesn't involve 9 months of SGA. But let's say they do reach 9 months of SGA later. Can we file a claim on those first two periods of service?
If it's a separate period of VR, yes.
Yes.
I would say
okay.
So.
Okay, so there can be SGA claims and a Section 301
on the same
also, on the same person. Yeah. Okay.
Right. But of course, you know, you would have to be able to make sure to show the connectivity between the earlier periods of VR.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
But that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Your next question is from the line of David Leon.
My question is around the submitting of that 301 claim. The first one I had, and I did get a letter about it. It was fantastic, easy to work on. But I went ahead and checked our seeds every other month because I was under the impression I had 1 year from when SSA decided their benefits ended whether or not they had finished our program. And I want to be clear that with a 301 case, I actually have 12 months from the month they end our program.
The closure determines how, you know, the start of the clock, but I'm trying to figure out, I guess there would be cases where SSA would have gone ahead and terminated benefits for some other reason other than closing the case. Presumably, either, you know, they determined that it wasn't likely to do it or something else may have happened. But, no, you still have 12 months from when you close the case to file the claim. It's just that the payment period will have already stopped back when SSA terminated benefits.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's complicated, but it does make sense. Anything else, David?
No, that was it. And again, we got a letter. The other thing we are trying to do in Virginia is we're working with our transition counselors specifically and having them leave information in the local schools. And I forget the name of the form, but there's a document that, an SSA document that clients can fill out to support their need for 301 protection. I can't remember what that is, but we're trying to get that in as many places as we can.
Yeah, it again, it's not something that comes up that often, and it's hard to keep everybody knowledgeable about it, given staff turnover and everything, but anything you can come up with to get that information out there is helpful. Next question, operator.
Your next question comes from line of Gina Hunt.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hey, Gina.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. Hey, so the two questions I have that often come up when I'm training staff about 301s, and by the way, I also got a notification once, so that part I did get. But my question is does the beneficiary get to keep their medical benefits during the 301? That's the question I often get. I know they get to keep payments, but I was not sure about medical. And then two, there is no harm, like, in if they know their benefits are going to cease because they failed a CDR to point out to the office that they're working with DR and asking if they would qualify for 301?
Gene, I missed the last part of that question. Can you go over that again?
Sure. So if you have a beneficiary that they failed a CDR or they know they're not going to be, they went through the SSI redetermination and did not pass, but they've been working with VR. I know that Social Security, in theory, will pick up the potential 301 cases, but can the consumers also go and ask, hey, am I eligible for 301?
Absolutely. I imagine there could be circumstances where SSA would miss it in some case. I don't think it's very likely, but there's never any harm in the customer or their representative saying, gee, you know, I think this person should be entitled to it. Did we miss something? And check it out.
Okay. And then do you know if they get medical benefits while on 301?
You know, I can't imagine. It's not something I'm really that knowledgeable about, but if their benefits continue, I'm pretty sure that either, you know, medical assistance for SSI or Medicare for Title II would still stay in effect until the cessation is actually processed.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you.
Take care.
As a reminder to ask a question, press star 1. Your next question is from the line of Mike Hermanson.
Yeah, this is Mike Hermanson in Montana. I just wanted to say, actually, I think it's working pretty smoothly in Montana. I get about 7 or 8 forms from the Disability Determination Unit every month in terms of VR participation. And they've had me go down and do training. So if you're kind of wondering about getting the participation forms, maybe you should talk to your DDU supervisor and maybe they'll let you do some training on the staff. And basically here, there's a place where the consumer can check that they're participating in VR, but the claims people here, they kind of look in terms of the documentation that they review. If they see anything that makes it, that looks like the person's seeing a VR counselor, they send me a form. So it's working pretty well here. And we get one, maybe two 301 cases a year, and they process real smoothly. They're slow, but they all process.
Great.
That's all I've got.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Oh, is that Mike?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Any more questions, operator?
At this time, there are no further audio questions.
Okay. With that, I want to once again thank our friends over in Office of Disability Operations for the presentation and for being here as a technical resource. And we'll move on to the rest of the agenda. General announcements and VR, I'm going to turn over to Danielle Armstrong.
Hello, everybody. I just have a couple things. Before I get into those, a lot of your questions are for the field office. We didn't have any field office representation on the line today, but we have written down those questions from the chat, and we'll make sure that we get answers to those and make sure we get those out to everybody as well. The two updates I have, one, I wanted to give everybody an update on the VR handbook. It is actually completed and being reviewed by the analysts and the management staff, so that should be out shortly. We got a couple questions about VR input on the handbook. That would actually come once we release it to you. What we've done with the handbook is make sure that we have all the rules and regulations in. With those, we wouldn't really use your input since we are the creators of the actual rule and the regulation. Now, when we do release that, by all means, we do want to hear, like, feedback on the format if something's not clear. So we do welcome all of that once it's completed. Hopefully, we'll have that out within the next 30 days. So I wanted to give an update on that. The second thing has to do with the pending claim list and our transition to iTOPS. What you will notice is coming up sooner than later, I'll give you more information as we get it, but this is just kind of a heads up. You are going to see a lag and a discrepancy in your pending claim list. With the transition, in order for them to convert all of the data and all of the claims over to the new iTOPS system, you're going to see that lag. It shouldn't be a long time frame. We'll have, like I said, more information on that to come, but I just wanted to give you a heads up on that because we just recently spent a lot of time getting the pending claim list up to date. The good thing with that is once that's complete and everything's in, of course, you know you'll have the claim upload and a push of a button. So once you do that, you'll be able to see every claim there. You're not going to have that mail issue. You're not going to have a lag. What you see will be what we see. Again, more information on that to come. It may come to a point where, depending on how many cases you have to submit, you may hold on to some to put in the file until that date. But, again, as we get closer to it and we get more information, we'll definitely get that to you. I just wanted to kind of let everybody know that was what was coming. We just found that out from systems that there's going to be that lag. So before you start to see it, I wanted to let you know. And, again, you'll hear more on that. You'll probably hear a lot from Raquel. but in the end, in the long run, when it's all said and done and we have iTOPS, all of the issues that you have seen with discrepancies in the pending claims list, discrepancies with the mail will be eliminated. So that's what we kind of have to look forward to. We did get an inquiry about having a separate call for VREN's. What I'm going to ask, because we only got one request for that, if you have any desire for that, we want you to send that in to the help desk. Send in that you would be interested in a separate call for VREN's, and if you could, some of the topics that you feel would be pertinent for you all to discuss, because we don't want to institute another call if it's not going to be beneficial to you all. those are the only updates that I had. I'm going to turn it over to Raquel Donaldson, who most of you speak with on the help desk for payment updates.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Raquel. I really don't have any cost reimbursement updates. I just actually wanted to thank everyone. I know you know you're aware right now that I'm sending out monthly any requests, any suggestions in regards to this call. And I just want to thank everyone who takes the time to submit their topics and issues and questions to me. I also wanted to point out there are times when we have repeated issues or topics. I'm actually going to have placed on the chat line the email address, or the website rather, where we post all of the notes from all the past all VR calls. So when you send me an issue, if I know that we've already talked about it in a past call, I'm just going to refer you to the website so that you can have all the information there at your fingertips. If you're unable to copy it down now, then you can always send me a question on the VR Help Desk email, and I can send it to you there as well. So that's all I have for today. I'm going to pass it on to Katie Schreibinger.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I am going to be short. I wanted to leave time for everyone to answer the general questions. The first note is about the portal and the upcoming changes to the portal. Cost reimbursement claims processing will be added to the portal this fall. Every VR agency with users enrolled in the portal will be able to submit claims to the portal when the new functionality goes live. We plan to pilot some of the new functionality to ensure that everything is working properly. The pilot is not going to begin until October, and at this rate, we have not selected VRs for testing yet. I will have more information on next month's call, so please stay tuned for that. It is a little far out to be picking things for the pilot. And then I just wanted to let you all know that for those of you with burning questions on timely progress reviews, and we know there are many of you out there, help is near. Alyssa Ness is going to be the key speaker on the August VR call. We wanted to give you a heads up, so if you aren't going to be able to make that August VR call, you can submit questions, please, to the VR Help Desk, and we can make sure Alyssa gets to those and answers those questions so you can get the answers to your questions on the transcript. She will be going through TPR and overview and TPR training. This is not going to be, portal-specific training. This is just TPR basics, how it works, how it's going to work when it goes live. That's all I have, and I'll send it back to Raquel.
And at this time, we're going to go ahead, operator, open up the lines for any questions in regards to anything.
As a reminder, to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, to ask a question, press star 1. Please hold for your first question. You do have a question from the line of Don Duvall.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. This is Dawn. My question is to SSA. Is there some way to get a list of 301 cases at all?
Well, based on the way they explain the process to you, we don't have a list of the cases. So as they receive the information and they notify us, we would notify you. Now, one thing I will suggest to everybody, because the field offices are notifying somebody in the VR, it may be worth trying to find out who in your agency is receiving that notification. Like we said, on our end, what we're going to do once we receive it, we're going to send it out to the coordinator so that we know at least that it's getting to the contact that we know is going to get it to you guys. As of right now, that's the best that we can offer. Like I said, I have taken down all of the questions for the field office, and what we're going to do is reach out to our counterparts that deal with the field office to find out if there's anything else we can do to find out. I think one person was said that their field office wasn't even aware of 301. So we're going to talk to them to get some more information to hopefully make everything a lot clearer. But if you could find out who's receiving the notification at your VR, that would probably be a big help.
How could I find that out? I am the only one person that does this program in this whole state, so I don't know who else they would be sending them to. How do I find out the name of the person they're sent to?
You, two things. One, you can reach out to one of your local field office and see if they can point you in the right direction. You could also reach out to the regional coordinator, because I would think that they would have an idea. But again, because that's on the field office end, we don't have a whole lot of guidance for you on that. But we're going to try to find out what we can so we can get you guys some more information. But right now, that's really all that we have.
When you say local field office, you mean the local DDS office?
The way they explained, it's going to the field office, like your local Social Security field office. I would probably start there. But again, we're not really sure what the process is once they get it. We're going to try to find that out, but that's as much as we know right now, what we just received from the Office of Disability Operations.
Okay.
Yeah, in most cases, I don't think the DDS would necessarily be aware that it was truly a 301.
Right.
I mean, they may, if the field office knows that at the point at which it goes to DDS for a CDR, you know, they may have annotated it potential 301 case, and they would be aware of it. But, again, it doesn't become a 301 until ODO makes that actual determination. So,
is sent to the local Social Security office.
Right.
And the beneficiary obviously gets a copy of the determination, and I believe the local office does. They should be notifying you. But, again, going forward, we're going to send you these emails with the attachment, and over time, obviously, we'll have a database of everything that we're aware of that's pending. So hopefully somewhere down the road, we would be able to tell you, well, gee, Dawn, we show that, Alaska's got X number or something like that, but there's no real database of it as of this point.
Very concerned about all the lost claims, because you only have the 12 months once the case closes, and I've only had one in 9 years. So it sounds like some states are getting two or three every month.
Yeah, I would be surprised if the volume's that high. But again, there shouldn't be that many. Once we went to electronic case openings and closures, I really think that prevented a lot of 301 cases. And I think the majority you see now are probably the age 18 determinations and TPR failures.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Your next question is from the line of Eugenia Cox.
It's me again. I have asked a couple of the branch, SSA field offices, if they have or are they notify Social Security of Section 301, and I got the same response that some of the other states got, is they had no clue what I was talking about. So, again, even though Mike Hermanson has a good relationship with his, I'm assuming DDS is telling him these things and notifying him, I would like to know who the actual person is that would be responsible for that so that I could get in touch with them to find out. Because honestly, like Dawn, there's really nobody else in our agency that would be getting these notifications. And if they were, they would be forwarding them to me. So, because we're very, level on the management side. So, again, this is, have no clue, maybe a step-by-step, if you guys could do an outline to let us know, if you don't hear anything, go to this person or contact this. It doesn't have to be a person. It can just be a position of somebody that would be responsible for that, whether it be in the SSA field office or whether it be in the DDS office. And then my other question is, and it's in regard to the portal, is I'm having, and I hadn't heard back from Katie or anybody else with regard to this, but I am able to put people into in-use status, but when I try to put them into ticket assignment status, it says that they're not in current pay status. And that shouldn't be happening. And I haven't heard anything. Yeah.
This is Katie. You sent me one example. They are looking into the one. It does help for them to have more than one example. If you have more SSNs, can you please send them?
Yeah, it's for me it doesn't. it only happens when I go to try to change an in-use status person into a ticket. So, you know, again, I make the assumption that the system is only allowing the person to go in use if they're in current pay. And since we send over 900 to 1,000 people in a given month and it's putting them in use, we assume that that's correct.
And
so unless we individually check.
But I'm just saying every time you get that error, you need to send it to me because I gave it to systems and I said I have one SSN out of the thousands that process every month. So they only think it's one. So if you have more examples, I need to send them up.
Yeah, I find out, like I said, I only find out when I try to convert them.
Sure. Well, please send them. The more information you give me, the more examples, the better chance they have of finding out what's going wrong.
Yeah, and it's happened before. I've noticed it when I go to file a cost reimbursement claim, and it shows that the ticket was put in use, but then you tell me that they weren't in pay status when they deny the claim. And that gets really confusing, too.
The older cases, if we can't track down a batch process that happened before the portal happened, but if you have cases that are recent that happened in the past year since we launched the portal, because now the portal is doing the transaction. So if the recent cases on the portal, that's the kind of stuff I need so they can figure out, you know what I mean? It's a gigantic haystack trying to figure out the code. So I need recent cases, something that happened in the portal, and hopefully they can figure out what it is.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. I didn't realize there was more than one, so thank you. Please send them up. We'll get it fixed.
Yeah.
At this time, there are no further audio questions.
All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us for the call. I have one last kind of reminder item. Next week, I believe it's on Wednesday, there will be a WISE seminar on youth transition. Tips for transitioning from school to employment and work incentives for young adults. So we encourage any of you interested in those things to check that out. I think you can register at choosework.net. I know there's a phone number also. If you can't find that, let us know and we'll hook you up with it or we'll put it in the minutes. Thanks again. We'll see you on next month's call.
And next month's call is Tuesday, July 12th at 3:00.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for joining. We ask that you please disconnect your lines.